You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In the 1980s, many large companies began replacing pension plans with 401ks, tax-free savings plans that invested in the stock market. These 401ks allowed those companies to cut benefit costs and, in theory, allowed employees more choice in where to invest their futures. But when the stock market collapsed in 2008, so did the savings of millions of Americans, many of whom were on the verge of retirement, suddenly were unable to support themselves without a paycheck. In The End of Retirement, the cover story in the August issue of Harper's Magazine, award-winning journalist Jessica Bruder profiled Linda May, one of the rising number of Americans of retirement age who crisscrossed the country in RVs to work at temporary jobs in order to sustain themselves. And I'm very pleased that it brings both Jessica Bruder and Linda May to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
Linda, are you there?
Yes.
Oh, hi.
Hi, Linda.
Hi, we'll get to you in a moment, Linda. Jessica, how did you first learn about people like Linda, grandparents traveling across the country for migrant work?
Well, I'd read in the news about just Amazon warehouse work, and one story I read made mention of work campers. And I'm a big subculture nerd, and I said, what are work campers? It sounds like this club that I don't know anything about. So when I started researching it and online, just seeing all sorts of people who were A, looking for work, but B, helping each other find job tips, trade RV repair tips, just this thriving community of bloggers and job seekers and employers courting them, it kind of blew my mind.
How many people do you estimate are doing this? And is this purely an effect of the 2008 recession, or has it been around longer?
It's an effect of, it's definitely a compound effect, but basically there's no way to know how many people are doing this. The only thing that I can see numerically, because the population is so nomadic and dispersed, is that Amazon started the program, their work camper program, which is called Camper Force, as a pilot in 2008, which really keys in with the recession, and it's grown to about 2,000 headcount now.
Linda, where are you living and working now?
At present, I'm in Sherwin Creek Campground in Mammoth Lakes, California.
When did you first decide to buy a motorhome and start looking for work in different parts of the country?
Well, it was around 2010, I think. I started looking at it, and I started going online and ran into Bob Wells, his blog online, and I just kept researching it and kept thinking that could be an option, especially when I saw the amount of my Social Security check was going to be. I'm like, how am I going to retire? Because that's all I have.
You lost the 401k?
Did
you have any pension plan?
No, I didn't.
Mm-mm. And Bob Wells, I should add, he has a blog called cheaprvliving.com and has really become a phenomenal resource for a lot of people who are giving up stick and brick houses and turning to the road.
When you decided to get an RV, could you afford to buy a new one?
Oh, no, I could not afford to buy a new one. I searched Craigslist for about 18 months.
How much do they cost?
The one I bought? I paid $4,000 for it.
And what condition was it in?
It needed some repairs, but my background is construction, so I'm perfectly capable of taking care of those things that would put other people off.
You but say, go ahead.
The engine was sound. It just needed some cosmetic and mechanical systems repairs, so...
Now, you say you were in construction before. What were you doing and where were you living?
I was in Arizona. I was a building inspector, a plans examiner, a general contractor.
And that just fell apart? Or you just were forced to retire?
I had a business problem and my construction company went under.
Now, Jessica, you interviewed Bob Wells. What did he have to say about the recent rise of work campers?
Sure. Well, Bob basically, he, in the 1990s, was working as a Union Safeway clerk up in Alaska. And when he got divorced, he found that the income that could have comfortably supported one family could no longer support a split family. So he moved into a box van. Basically, first was totally freaked out, said, oh my gosh, I'm an exile, I'm an outcast. Then said, wait, I can really adapt to this and make a lifestyle of it. Started running a blog later called Cheap RV Living. And he said that web traffic exploded around 2008. Just lots of people coming to him looking for resources on if I have to have my home on wheels, how do I do it? And how do I find a community around that?
And he's embraced minimalism, hasn't he?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
People who probably lived a lot, very different kind of lifestyle, suddenly are living a much more pared down lifestyle. Some of these work campers used to have white collar jobs and expected to spend their later years in retirement. When you spoke to them, did they say they resented having to adjust to this new life?
No, I mean, the amazing thing about people is how adaptable and resilient they are, which isn't to say the economy isn't really messed up and we obviously need to change some stuff. But I met one gentleman, 77 years old, who was a former State Department fellow teaching English overseas, who is now working in the Amazon plant.
And Chuck Stout, who'd been head of product development at McDonald's, ended up living in an RV with his wife.
How his team happen? Is the reason McDonald's has ice cream. So, yeah, he and his wife, they were living in a home on a golf course in Myrtle Beach and had to declare bankruptcy, give up the car, give up the house. His savings got wiped out, you know, one bad choice, and he was on the road.
Now, Linda, Jessica mentioned Amazon as a place that a lot of work campers work. You worked for them at one point. What were you doing there?
I was a stower for Amazon.
A stower? And what is that?
When the product comes in, they put it in tubs, and then you take and put it into the bins so that it's stowed away.
Mm-hmm. And what was your shift?
I worked from 6 in the evening till 4:30 in the morning.
That's a hard shift for anyone. How old were you at the time?
Last year, 63.
And how did you hear about that job?
Another blogger, Jimbo's Journeys, mentioned that he had worked for Amazon. And I contacted Amazon, and they hired me.
How physical was the job? Was it kind of difficult?
Yes. You run up and down 3 flights of stairs. The warehouse is immense. You go from reaching to the top to squatting on the floor to reach the bottom to put things on shelves.
And you're also pressured to get a lot of stuff done very quickly. Were the other work campers, working with you at that place?
Yes, there were 450 of us at that time.
So it was more likely to be someone who would have been normally retired than some kid who's just out of college or high school?
The majority, yes, were retirees.
My guests are Linda May and Jessica Bruder. We are talking about an article that Jessica Bruder wrote for Harper's Magazine called The End of Retirement. Jessica, does Amazon actively recruit people in Linda's situation?
They absolutely do. I followed their recruitment. They go all over the country to RV shows and rallies, and I encountered them. I went to one show in Pennsylvania and another in Quartzsite, Arizona, which is a popular congregation spot in the winter because the RVers can camp on the federal public lands for free or close to it, and a lot of companies, including Amazon, send recruiters to the area to scout for new workers.
One camper calls Quartzsite Burning Man for geezers.
Yeah.
Now you've written a book about Burning Man.
Do you
see the comparison?
Absolutely, but not in terms of what you'd think. They are not partying and blowing things up, but in terms of the communal spirit and sense of solidarity, absolutely.
Now, Linda, were you working for Amazon itself or for a temp agency?
No, we were Amazon employees.
And are injuries common? We're talking about elderly people having to do rather physical work.
I'm not sure how common it was. I ended up with, I believe it's tendonitis in my wrist.
And how does Amazon deal with injuries with its older employees?
There is a clinic on site called AmCare, and like if you get a cut, you can go for a Band-Aid. I had a fainting spell while I was there. I was really dizzy, and I went there, and technician, the nurse, took my blood pressure, did a blood sugar test, and my blood pressure, gosh, I can't remember what it's in the article, I think, was very low, so she had me lie down, and I wasn't getting better, and so she called an ambulance, and they took me to the hospital.
Now, Jessica, did you find that other people you talked to tended to be injured as well on that job?
Well, that was one of the weird things. I know I was in Kansas, and I met this very sweet couple, and they were there and committed for the long haul. And I was emailing back and forth with other folks afterwards, and they said, oh, by the way, those guys left. And I tracked them down, and, you know, a lot of people have upgraded body parts after a certain age, and some of them don't really hold up with the work. This guy, his rotator cuff wouldn't hold. I did meet other people who had also dropped out of the program when their bodies couldn't manage it.
Should I assume that most of those workers are uninsured?
Yes.
Linda, how did you pay for your medical bills? Did you have to pay for them out of pocket?
Yes, I was charged my medical bills.
And if you're sent to the emergency room, it get rather expensive.
Very expensive. They ran all kinds of tests. They couldn't find anything that was wrong with me. So they had no explanation why I was fainting.
Where did you
by
go
the time
at?
I was,
go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
By the time I arrived at the hospital in the ambulance, I had recovered. So there wasn't much that they could detect from my present state.
But I assume you decided to leave Amazon after that. Where did you go?
No, I continued to work. I took 2 days off and went back to work.
Ah. And do you prefer staying in one place? After all, those RVs, the older ones, can break down. And that can be rather expensive as well.
Do I like staying in one place? No, I would prefer to travel and see more of my country.
So a lot of people who retire do just that. They get RVs and they travel. But most of them don't wind up then stopping at some campsite and working from, what was it, 7 o'clock at night until 4 in the morning?
6 at night. It was a 10-hour shift. So
a 10-hour
shift. And a half-hour lunch. Yes.
Wow.
A 10-hour shift.
We're going to take a little break. We'll come back with more from Linda May, one of the subjects of Jessica Bruder's article, The End of Retirement. It's in the current issue of Harper's Magazine. Stay with us. We are talking with Jessica Bruder about her article, The End of Retirement, which is the cover story of the August issue of Harper's Magazine. And also with Linda May, who is one of the people profiled in that article, about people who thought they were going to retire and wind up working at jobs across the country, low-paying jobs on the whole. How much did Amazon pay you, Linda?
For the night shift, I earned $12.25 an hour.
And that was enough to pay for your living expenses?
They paid for the RV park spot. I paid my electricity, groceries, and the gas to get back and forth to work. So, yes, it more than covered my expenses at that time.
What other companies are actively recruiting elderly workers, Jessica?
Oh, lots of them. So basically camp hosting, what Linda is up to right now, is a really, really common thing. You see it in campsites from coast to coast. Theme parks hire these people too. There's Adventureland in Iowa, Dollywood, Waldrug, the classic kitschy road stand. All these people hire work campers. And the beet harvest is a big one, the annual sugar beet harvest. They bring people in.
Beet harvest, I always thought that most of the people who are doing the harvesting were migrant workers from Mexico and Central America.
Yeah, they're not.
Now we also have work campers doing it?
They're not in the field doing the harvesting. I mean, a lot of stuff is mechanized now. So basically what they're doing is, and again, often it's on a 12-hour overnight shift, is they're standing out, and often it's quite cold, and taking sample bags from the drivers, so like a 30-pound bag of produce. They're directing the trucks in. They're operating machines called skid steers. They're basically facilitating that transfer point where all the beets come in.
You mentioned the U.S. Forest Service and the Army Corps of Engineers. Are government agencies hiring these people as well?
Absolutely. It's part of the campsite culture now.
Do any of them receive health insurance or other benefits?
No.
Even if they're working for the U.S. government?
Correct.
Linda, can you tell us a bit about Quartzsite, Arizona? Jessica said that it's a popular destination. Why is it popular for someone like you?
There is every kind of product and company that would have anything to do with an RV converge there in a big tent, like a RV fair. And that's where the employers come and the vendors. So all the camping is, you know, there's a lot of free camping available, so that's attractive. The weather's wonderful. The community is wonderful.
Are you able to form bonds, make friends?
Oh, I've made wonderful friends. I've made more friends since I've been in my RV than in 1 year than I did in a home where, you know, the neighbors aren't too friendly. You know, people don't talk to each other. But in an RV, you know, we immediately have community.
What are some of the biggest challenges of living and working in under these conditions, living in an RV? What happens when it gets cold? Is the RV still comfortable?
Oh, yes. I have a propane forced air heating system. I have a 28-foot C-class RV that is mostly self-contained, except for electricity right now. But the campsite I have electrical outlet that I plug in, so I have electricity. But a lot of people put solar systems on so that they can boondock without any connections.
Did you think that all of this would be temporary and that you'd go back to living with your family at some point, or did this seem like a more permanent situation for you?
I think this is a permanent situation.
Are you still thinking about building an Earthship?
Yes, definitely.
Can you tell them what an Earthship is? That was pretty cool.
An Earthship is a totally self-contained home. The water is used four times. It grows. The gray water system goes into gardens. The black water system goes into outdoor ornamental plants. It's powered by solar. The water comes from rain. It's built with tires, cans, and bottles. If you go online and look at Michael Reynolds' Earthship site, he has all his information there.
So you would do that after you stopped going around to different jobs in your RV?
Well, since my background is construction, I know that the process of building a home under these circumstances would take a bit. So I would probably build for a while, go to work, come back, build for a while until the home is completed.
Jessica, what are the conditions for people who have medical problems? We've ascertained that most of them don't have health insurance, although I'm not sure whether they can get Obamacare. Are there medical services available in Quartzsite?
Well, I did not see. I mean, there are a lot of, basically, Quartzsite is this tiny community in the summer because it gets up to 120 degrees, and then it gets mobbed every winter. And while some services open in the winter only, like there's a huge soup kitchen and ministry that I spent some time at, I didn't see a lot of medical stuff around, although I could have just missed it. I mean, it could be there somewhere. But in terms of care as people get older, I think a lot of people rely on their families if they can. And otherwise, it's a bit of a tricky time. I see a lot of people actually returning to Eastern medicine on the road to stuff that they can get, whether it's, you know, they're... Linda, remember you had that lavender, too? You were telling me about that scent stuff.
Yes.
A lot of people are using non-traditional...
Aromatherapy.
Yes, with essential oils. I met many people that... instead of over-the-counter drugs or prescriptions, have turned to herbs and essential oils.
And these are new agey people, so all the stuff I traditionally thought of as kind of Age of Aquarius-y stuff, you see it kind of permeating throughout the culture, which is interesting.
Could you get Obamacare?
When I tried to go online and do it, it was so jammed. I didn't manage to get signed up, and now I understand that I have to wait until sign up time again.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, there was a big window of opportunity, but do you have access to computers? Do you have Wi-Fi at these campsites?
I have a hotspot. I have a computer, but I can't always afford to. It's a Virgin hotspot. And I can't always afford the $35 to get a Wi-Fi.
My guests are Linda May, who is one of the subjects of Jessica Bruder's article, The End of Retirement, in the current issue of Harper's Magazine. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Jessica, you write that these campsites were microcosms of the national economic catastrophe, but it seems that these people are quite self-sufficient.
Remarkably so, and the way they care for each other as well. I mean, I'd been at one campsite in Kansas for 5 minutes where a gentleman hadn't updated his driver's license and couldn't cash a paycheck and was broke and needed gas money, and everybody was trying to get him to take it, and he didn't want to do it, and just the generosity you see out there is pretty incredible.
Although Linda doesn't suggest that she's worried about the future, I'd imagine some of these people are, as they get older. They may very well face serious physical problems. Alzheimer's is not unknown among the elderly. Did they talk about those things when you interviewed them?
I think people really don't want to think about it. You know, you bring it up. I asked a lot of people, what's your game plan? Linda has a game plan, but most people I talked to did not. Some people said, I'll die behind the wheel. Other people planned to, you know, kind of fall into the arms of their families and were okay with that. And I think a lot of people just didn't know and were trying to get through the day.
Did you live at any of the campsites when you were reporting the story?
I spent a lot of time in campsites in Fernley, but you can't tent there and I don't have an RV. So when I was in Quartzsite, Arizona on the public federal land, I did live in a tent for 3 weeks meeting people.
A listener on Twitter says that Linda's description reminds her of the Good Migrant Workers camp in the Grapes of Wrath. Do you see any similarities?
Well, it is kind of wild. I interviewed one guy who was telling me that he couldn't wait to get to Hawaii because he could live off the fruit from the trees there, which made me think of Grandpa Joad smashing those grapes on his face. So you do see some stuff like that.
How did you hear about these work campers in the first place?
I was just reading about the Amazon warehouses, and they were talking about the temp labor, which is a vast part of the workforce. And then, there was a work camper who said, and I said, a work camper? What's that? And, you know, it piqued my curiosity and got a little bit obsessed with checking it out. So,
do most of them talk about the problems that they have with the limited amount of funds they get from Social Security? And are some of them at least getting some pension?
Most of them are, but if you ever sometimes you see retired military, they are people who had jobs of the state. people who should have had great pensions but got divorced and were forced to kind of raid it early and then split what was a small amount in half so it couldn't accrue. A lot of people, obviously, you meet them, they don't put their finances out on the table. They welcome you in and often want to give you a cup of coffee and just talk about life on the road.
It's usually assumed that family will take care of you as you get older. Linda, was that not the case for you?
My daughter is more than willing, yes, and her husband. But I'd rather not intrude on their family.
So you prefer to remain independent?
Absolutely.
I saw a lot of that, too, people saying, oh, you know, I can go crash with my kids, but I don't want to do that, which I respect.
Are there any unresolved labor disputes at places like Amazon?
If it's Amazon right now, there is an issue with a bunch of workers who were not being paid for the time that they had to spend in line going through the metal detectors. Basically, Amazon won't let you bring in anything that Amazon sells, and while you're leaving, they want to make sure you're not taking anything they're trying to sell. But that's a fair amount of time in line when it adds up day after day. So right now there is a pending suit over that in terms of lost wages.
Linda, can you vote? Doesn't this lifestyle prevent you from establishing a legal residence?
I use my daughter's address for my residence, and yes, I can vote with the mail-in voting, right? Absentee vote ballot.
Now, Courtside sounds like a pretty good place to be because it's actually set up for the situation. Are people setting up work camps elsewhere in the country?
Okay. Are you asking?
Well, I'll ask both of you. Where would you go? Right now you're in California. You're in Mammoth Lakes, California. Is there a good work site? Is there a good campsite there?
I'm in a federal campground that is operated by a concessionaire, a subcontractor.
Mm-hmm. And where are you working?
At Sherwin Creek Campground.
Mm-hmm. So you're working at the campground?
Yes, I am the camp host. The camp has reservations, and I take care of people's reservations. I make sure that the bathrooms are clean and the campsites are clean and that people ask about the surrounding areas, what's there to do, and just general hosting.
Would that be considered a plum job?
Well, it is physical. They do give me a golf cart to run around in, though. I'm happy about that. There's quite a few acres here.
Jessica, you also detail the history of retirement in your article. What did you learn?
What was interesting to me is just what you see in the media these days about Social Security, you know, shrink it, expand it, is this a battle of the old versus the young? It just started making less and less sense to me the more I read about the history of retirement finance. I mean, basically Social Security coming out of the New Deal. The whole idea was this is a supplement. This is not supposed to fully fund a retirement. A lot of modern economists refer to that plan that came out of the New Deal as a three-legged stool. You've got pensions, which have slowly ceded to 401ks, which, you know, transfer the risk and a lot of the cost to workers. That was one leg of the stool. Another leg was savings. We saw a lot of those wiped out by the recession. And the third leg was Social Security. So basically, you've got a three-legged stool, two legs kind of whacked out, and now we've got a monopod.
Are there similar situations in other countries, in other industrialized countries?
That's interesting. I think there are other industrialized countries that are more generous to their workers in retirement, but I definitely didn't study the international picture when delving into this article.
Jessica Bruder teaches at Columbia University's Graduate School of Journalism, is the author of Burning Book, A Visual History of Burning Man, and most recently an article in the cover story in the current Harper's Magazine, The End of Retirement, about another kind of Burning Man situation. Its subtitle is When You Can't Afford to Stop Working. And she has been with us along with Linda May, who is one of the people she profiles in that article. And I thank you both so much for being on our show today.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having me.